KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we take stock in our first half hour of the recent massacre in the southern region of the Philippines in which 45 were killed, including 12 journalists, in election-related violence. Then we'll spend our second half hour focusing our attention on U.S.-India relations, with particular attention to a recently released report that was put out by the Bay Area Council on ties between the Bay Area and India. Forum is next. It will include your calls and emails after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Yesterday, a state of emergency was declared in two provinces in the southern region of the Philippines by Philippine President Gloria Arroyo following a massacre on Monday of 46 people, including 12 journalists, and election-related violence. The Philippines has had a long-standing culture of impunity for political violence, but it's now one of the world's least safe places for journalists. And in this opening half-hour segment, we want to explore what occurred there and why. Joining us is John Gershman, who is co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus, a progressive think tank on U.S. foreign policy and international affairs. He's also clinical associate professor of public service at New York University, and he joins us this morning from Princeton, New Jersey. And we welcome you. Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Bob Dietz with us, who's Asia Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists is a nonprofit organization designed to promote press freedom worldwide by defending the rights of journalists to report the news without fear of reprisal. And we welcome Bob Dietz from New York City.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I also want to say good morning to Stephen Rood, who is Philippine country representative for the Asia Foundation and who has lived in the Philippines since 1981. Welcome, Stephen Rood.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Stephen Rood, let me get some background on this for you. Like I said, there's this longstanding culture of impunity where political violence is concerned, and these are apparently political killings. What is going on here? There was a gubernatorial, an attempt to register a gubernatorial candidate?
Yes, there is a 10-day registration period throughout the Philippines for the May 2010 elections. And one of the possible mayors, one of the possible candidates for governor of the province of Maguindanao, sent his wife, his sister, his cousins, and so on to file his certificate of candidacy. He didn't go because he had been warned that there might be an ambush, and he was doing this by remote control in order to try to keep things safer.
He thought that women and children would not be accosted, pretty much, huh?
Well, it's the custom down there in conflict-affected areas of Mindanao, where clan conflicts are indeed rife, but it is the custom that women tend to be immune. They could be sent in to recover bodies or try to negotiate ceasefires and the like. And to have a large number of women killed is unprecedented.
This is like almost the wild areas of Afghanistan. I mean, in the sense of it being almost like the Wild West, but this is a frightful and horrible massacre and almost, well, not almost, it even in the wake of all the previous kind of violence we've seen politically, unprecedented that women would be included and that it would be a preemptive kind of thing.
Exactly. The Philippines does have a nationwide problem with electoral violence. In the last elections in 2007, something on the order of 150 people were killed throughout the country. But that tends to be one or two people in specific scattered incidents, not a large number such as this in one incident.
Well, John Gershman, these are allies, political allies, at least those who are being alleged to have been behind this, of President Arroyo. She's ordered an immediate, relentless pursuit of the killers, but most of the smart money says there's not going to be much justice in this.
That's correct. I mean, the kind of the person who's alleged to be behind this, the governor of the province, Datu Ampatuan, is been closely linked to the Arroyo administration in part because of the widespread belief that he was fundamentally responsible for a sizable electoral fraud in the 2004 election when Arroyo was elected. And while I think because for the reasons that Steve mentioned that this was a a killing that kind of has gone beyond the rule, so to speak, of the way in which guns, goons, and gold are used for as part of the currency for electoral competition. I think her administration need to come out and say that they were going to make some arrests and so on and so forth. And if in the current situation previous patterns are repeated, we're likely to see some people arrested who will be attributed to be people who were actually responsible for the shootings and so forth. But the likelihood that additional arrests will go up the chain to the people who were likely fundamentally the mastermind seems, I think, much less likely.
Well, the chain, at least some are alleging, goes all the way up to the mayor of this town and to the National Police Force. But what's so striking about this and what's so horrifying about this is that not only, like I say, was it preemptive before the election even occurred, just involving a registration, but family members were killed.
Family members, journalists, lawyers. I mean, in a whole number of areas, this was kind of really beyond the pale. And I think the numbers last I saw were up to 57 at this point that have been discovered, of which about a dozen are estimated to be journalists. And they're still unclear if they've actually found all the vehicles and all of the folks. It's not entirely clear exactly how many people were on the convoy. But it's reflective, I think, of a broader problem in the Philippines and under the Arroyo administration in particular. The people who were likely responsible for the killing were part of a paramilitary group that the Philippine government has, in fact, supported as part of its broader kind of counterinsurgency strategy against rebels in the southern Philippines. And at least the press reports now say that that group has been dissolved. Again, we'll wait to see what actually happens. But I think it's reflective of a broader problem in terms of not only the widespread impunity, but the way in which national political elites make alliances with warlords, and therefore these particular dynamics end up killing, you know, lots of innocent people, and that the Arroyo administration has been singularly unsuccessful and singularly chastised by a range of organizations for its failure to control and manage kind of violence, whether from the security forces or, in this case, its complicity with more quote-unquote, informal forms of political violence.
John Gershman again with us from Princeton is co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus. And Bob Dietz is Asia Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists. And Bob, we just heard John Gershman say not only journalists and family killed, but over 60 journalists have been killed in the past 20 years in the Philippines. This has become one of the most dangerous places in the world for journalists.
It is. With our figures, it ranks fifth right now, and that's not including these recent killings. We have a figure of 38 confirmed cases killed, and 27 more whose we could never confirm the motive in their killing. They might or might not have been killed for their work as journalists. So it has pretty bad reputation. I noticed earlier you're using the word impunity, and it's one of our greatest concerns. I mean, there is a great deal of impunity for anyone who would carry out a murder in the Philippines, but it's particularly egregious in the case of journalists.
We're talking mostly about stringers for national outlets and local media reporters, aren't we not?
One of the prime targets are what we call block timers, radio reporters in the provinces, people who buy blocks of time on radio stations. Very often there'll be a spokesperson for the party that was not elected to the mayor's office or the governor's office, and they'll wage a campaign of political commentary against the people who are in. I don't say this lightly, but the typical situation is a radio reporter in a provincial town being killed in a drive-by shooting by two men on motorcycles. Hardly any of these cases have been solved. Philippines ranks sixth in the world in terms of impunity in the killing of journalists. I mean, it's the sixth worst. Countries that are ahead of them are places like Iraq or Afghanistan or Somalia.
And at this point, we do have a state of emergency. President Arroyo has declared a state of emergency. So what about ongoing access to reporters who want to follow this story or who want to get information on the killings?
Well, I think that's a great concern. what I think there's a danger for journalists or people still going down there. I mean, this is I wouldn't call it an ultra hot war zone, but there is a question of retaliation and further shooting back, and more gunfire and more violence. I think the government realizes, even with the state of emergency, it's not going to be able to get away with telling journalists they can't go down there to cover the story. They just know that's a non-starter. If they were to do that, I think they would just receive so much criticism and accusations of cover-up that that there'd be no digging themselves out of that hole.
This is a half-hour segment, so I want to give out the phone number and invite those of you listening to join us if you have a question about this recent massacre in the Philippines or the whole culture of impunity as it has been described and characterized. Feel free to join us now. In fact, I would encourage you, if you have something you'd like to say or to ask, to do so now. It's toll-free, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls, and as I said, you can join us now, and please do. Toll-free, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. And Bob Dietz, is your organization's providing some aid to the families of these journalists?
Yes. Not quite sure. We're waiting for the dust to settle, frankly. I mean, you know, I was listening to your account of the numbers, and frankly, we're giving some amount of credibility to the number of 12 people killed, but there are also authorities, unnamed authorities, quoted out in a lot of media, putting the number as high as 20. That seems very large to me, given the nature of the area, but not out of the question. But I think for right now, we're working with there are several media support groups and a National Union of Journalists in the Philippines, kind of working with them, trying to figure out what we can do for the families. Just coincidentally, last night we had our annual International Press Freedoms Award dinner, which is also a fundraiser. And but we raised a real lot of money. We're still counting it up from the people who are attending to offer assistance to the families of the men and women who were killed in this.
If people are interested in contributing or getting involved, where should they go on the website?
CPJ.org. Glad to take donations. We would channel them directly through us to the organizations in the Philippines. It would be a channel for them, and it would be deemed very, very helpful. I think the government has offered compensation to the victims, kind of typical in a situation like this. Don't know when that will come or how much, but clearly, the families of the journalists who were killed are going to need a lot of financial assistance. Their major breadwinner has died.
Again, Bob Dietz is Asia Program Coordinator for the Committee to Protect Journalists and is with us from New York City. Let's go to your calls, and let's begin with a caller from Newark, California. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes,
how
sir.
Are you guys?
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is, how can there really be expected to make any progress and finding these people and in stopping this kind of violence when there is just so much corruption in the government in the Philippines? I know you have the same problem in Afghanistan and Iraq, where the whole system is so corrupt from even everyday life of dealing with the local police and the bribes and everything else. How can you even hope to solve this problem at all?
Well, I think it's a very pertinent and important question. John Gershman?
No, so I think the caller highlights something, and this has been a recurring observation by the UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Executions, who's made two visits to the Philippines and highlighted this, as well as Philippine human rights organizations and so forth. Realistically, the institutional structure and political interests are not there for there to be a very thoroughgoing investigation and to hold, in particular, the masterminds accountable. So I think this is going to be a question of the degree to which this becomes a source of popular mobilization, that journalists at places like the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism, who've done long-standing research in this area, the background research that people connected with Steve's organization have done on the history and legacy of Rito conflicts, these clan conflicts in the southern Philippines, that this actually needs to become a political issue, and that it's really only with significant popular public pressure, is there going to be some kind of movement? Because I don't think anyone, particularly in the Philippines, has a lot of confidence that if it's just going to be left up to, you know, the president and her political will, that that's going to result in good outcomes.
You want to add something, Stephen Rood?
Well, I think, as John says, we need to see this in the context of the general political situation. And we do have a presidential election coming up. The administration, the current national administration, is trying to get out in front of the issue by, in fact, they've already expelled the Ampatuans from the ruling party and taken them out of being the regional and the provincial chair in response to this incident. But at the same time, the rumors are that the victims, the Mangung Dadatus, have allied themselves with the newly rising Liberal Party, which has the son of former President Aquino as the presidential candidate. So you begin to see the political dynamics that are there that would possibly lead to the pressure on this particular incident. More generally, though, I think the necessity for keeping track of these and keeping it in the public eye is one of the vital ways of making sure that public pressure continues. And the Center for Media Freedom and Responsibility in the Philippines maintains a website of all these extrajudicial killings of journalists, and tries to keep track of how few of them result in convictions in order to keep that pressure on.
Let me bring more callers in. And David, join us. Good morning.
Hello. I'm considering a trip to northern Mindanao, to a place called Gingu City. I've developed a relationship with a woman online, and I was going to visit her now or in the near future. Would this be an unsafe thing to do, or what do you think?
Stephen Rood.
I would say I would have no hesitation of going there. In fact, if you take a look at the State Department's travel warnings, they don't include that city in the travel warnings.
So you said no hesitation.
Right, no hesitation. I go there all the time.
Comforting to hear, I'm sure, from your point of view, David, and I thank you for the call, and I want to get another caller on here. It's Mohammed. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. I always listen to your program. I used to be a freelance journalist myself. I'm from Iran. I used to be a blogger. I'm on exile now. I just wanted, because of the quality of your program, I really wish if you can address Iran and the situation of journalists in Iran. Iran has the largest number of journalists who are in prison. And recently, after the recent election, also most of them, according to their family, are under torture, physical torture. And I wish...
I would recommend, Mohammed, I would recommend reading the new issue in Newsweek, which has a cover story about a journalist from America of Iranian descent who was held in Iran prison for somewhat of upward of 180 days. But let me go to Bob Dietz on this. Iran is way up there, even ahead of the Philippines, is it not, Bob?
Ahead of the Philippines, yes.
In terms of killing journalists and journalists disappearing?
Not in terms of killing journalists so much as jailed journalists. And there was a real spate of that following
the so-called Velvet Revolution.
Iran is not the – China remains the largest jailer of journalists, and Iran held the rather dubious record for a month or two, but then they started to release people. The conditions that journalists were held in Iran and Tehran and around there were pretty rough, and people were really severely abused. A lot of them were just picked up, harassed, and released. But a lot of people suffered at the hands of the Iranian government. But
of course, one doesn't think of Iran as a democracy, and one thinks of the Philippines as a democracy, at least a putative democracy.
Michael, journalists and press freedom are always under attack. Democracies, it tends to be a little bit better. But, I mean, for CPJ, this is simply a growth industry. Our job is never going to go away of sort of confronting these problems. If it's in Iran, if it's in Iraq, if it's in a democracy like Sri Lanka or the Philippines, or Afghanistan, if you want to call that a democracy, journalists are constantly under attack, and particularly local journalists. I think 88% of all the journalists killed in the world are local journalists pursuing local stories, like just as what happened in Maguindanao, now, that they're covering local stories and then they come under the gun of a local authority or a local power figure. And of all those journalists killed, 85% of the journalists killed around the world, globally, none of their cases are prosecuted. I mean, this is 85% rate of impunity. This is not unique to the Philippines, although the Philippines is particularly egregious because it is a democracy. It's positioned itself as one. It really should be doing better. Going on a bit here, but one point I should make, in terms of getting the government to act on these, just on the question of killing of journalists, we launched a campaign quite a while ago. It's been going on for 2 years now, pressuring specifically the Philippines to deal with this question of impunity. And there has been some slight amount of progress. Two or three of these cases had their venues changed so that the trials could continue, and rather than have them tried in the same local courts where the crimes occurred. And the government did set up a specific police task force to deal with the killings of journalists. It hasn't slowed the killings one bit, frankly, and we're only seeing the slightest uptick in prosecutions in the cases. But that was done with the best sort of political will and intention of the government. But that's about the level of effectiveness we've been able to achieve so far.
Still, political killings are rife without justice being rendered, alas. And John Gershman, a lot of people are calling in here asking about, well, whether there's any role in this or what we can analyze in terms of Islamic interests or Islamic fanaticism in the Philippines.
I think the danger is that when Muslims may be involved in political killing, that because of the legacy of 9/11, that the easiest narrative is to try and fit this in with some kind of Islamic extremism. We haven't seen any evidence of this so far. Again, the research that folks at the Asia Foundation and elsewhere have done have chronicled the history of clan violence in the southern Philippines that dates back for a long period of time. And so although this particular massacre was particularly brutal and the rules, it was a different kind of it doesn't fit within kind of other kinds of terrorist attacks that have certainly happened in the Philippines from Abu Sayyaf and other.
So as we come up on a hard break here, Stephen Rood, we're talking again about clans and warlords and that kind of internecine warfare, essentially?
Because the Umpatuans, the ones who are accused of perpetrating this, have been allies of the national government. Although they are Muslims, they're allies of the national government against Muslim insurgent groups. So this really has nothing to do with Islamicism or anything like that. It's a struggle for political power, just as it is sometimes in other parts of the Philippines, where one gets the same idea of impunity. But this is just, as people say, an extraordinarily large number of casualties.
So horrible massacre. We'll continue to follow it. I want to thank you, Stephen Rood, from the Asia Foundation. Thank John Gershman from Foreign Policy and Focus, who's a clinical associate professor at NYU, and Bob Dietz from the Committee to Protect Journalists. When we come back, we're going to talk about India. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.